baby. You're in the sweet spot, girl. You're in the sweet spot, darling. It's a magical kingdom in a mixed up world. You're in the sweet spot, baby. You're in the sweet spot, girl. You're in the sweet spot, darling. It's a magical kingdom in a mixed up world.
Welcome to the Sweet Spot Podcast. My name is Lynn, your host, and Ken's my co-host. Ken, how's it going?
Well, Lynn, it is going. It is going. I am so happy to be here for this episode of the podcast.
This is episode 388.
388? Wow, that's that's hard to believe.
It really is.
What an accomplishment. That's amazing.
Yeah. And also, if you're wondering, who are these guys? Well, we are both former Disneyland custodial cast members, and we host the number one Disneyland podcast, hosted by two former Disneyland custodians.
Number one.
We are also the authors of the books Cleaning the Kingdom. We have two different volumes. You can get both of those wherever books are found, pretty much. Like, you can get them on Amazon. You can get the second book on our website, autographed by both of us, at the sweepspot.com. You can also get the digital versions of the books, like on Kindle or Apple Books, and you can also get the audio versions of the books that Ken narrated and I edited, and we put these together. But you can get those on Audible or wherever audiobooks are found also. If you want to support the show, and we really do appreciate it, for $5, you get some cool perks. And one of those is a bonus episode that we record specifically for the Patreons once a month. And you also get to join us for our current events live once a month. You get to chime in, leave some comments and chat in the chat room amongst other Sweet Spot listeners. And it's a lot of fun. And you can do that. Now, you don't have to, if you don't want those perks, or you just like, I really want to help them, but $5 might be a little much for me because I'm not going to benefit from those or whatever. The reason is, you can even give $1. Like, we have people that give $1, and we truly appreciate anything you're willing. It's just actually kind of humbling that people want to give their money to help support the show. And it's also not necessarily just to support, but you get some cool things out of it. And yeah, I think the show's worth some value. So, and we enjoy doing it. So yeah, if you'd like to do that, you can go to patreon.com or go to our website, thesweetspot.com, and look for the Patreon link. Also, some important news we want to announce, and that we had been announcing over the past many episodes, that we are going to be at D23, the Ultimate Fan Event, August 9th, 10th, and 11th, and we will be at the Laughing Place booth, and we have the times now. We're going to be there on Friday the 9th at between 11 and 3. We will be there signing our books and selling them, and we'll have stuff for Sweet Spot listeners, buttons or something, until they run out. And then Saturday the 11th or 10th, we'll be there from 11 to 3 also. And then Sunday, we'll just be there for 2 hours from 9 to 11 in the morning. So yeah, we'd hope to see everyone out there who's going, and stop by. I'm going to be in the park because they're doing a D23 day. I think that's what they're calling it. And that's going to be on the 8th. And I will be in the park then. So if you happen to see me, I will have buttons there too. If you're not going to D23, but you're going to that, I will be there. Anyways, just wanted you to bring that information to you and let you know about that. All right. Ken, who's our guest tonight?
Heck if I know. No, we have Jeff Hawkins, who was a Disneyland cast member from about 1985 to 1991. And we're going to talk about his roles that he had there during those pivotal years and some of the highlights of those years. So stay tuned. And he's got, he'll give you some insights that we haven't had on the show before. So that'll be great.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. So let's get right into it. Looking to go to Disneyland Resort in California, Walt Disney World Resort in Florida, Aulani in Hawaii, or on a Disney cruise, or Adventures by Disney Vacation, I am here to help you book the best vacation possible, and my expertise and services won't cost you anything extra. Disney pays me, not you. As a perk by booking a package with me, I can also book your dining reservations, park reservations, tours, shuttles, and more. Let me do the hard work while you get excited about your upcoming Disney vacation. I can also book Universal Studios trips as well. Contact me at lbarron, that's LBARRON, at concierge.com, that's concierge.com, or thesweepspot@gmail.com.
This is the parking lot tram only. This tram goes to all sections of the parking lot except the Bambi and Donald sections. We do not go to the Disneyland Hotel, the RTD, or Orange County bus stops. To reach the hotel or the bus stops, please board the special tram that loads directly across from the main entrance at the hotel tram loading sign. As the tram approaches, please stand within the white railings behind the yellow safety zone. Watch for small children and do not approach the tram until it has come to a complete stop. Thank you, and we hope you'll be back to visit us again soon.
Your attention, please. The Disneyland Limited, now leaving for a Grand Circle tour of the Magic Kingdom.
So, Jeff, did you grow up going to Disneyland as a child and growing up as your before you worked there?
Oh, yeah, most definitely. I was born and raised in Anaheim, California. So every summer, I think we would make a trip. We had some cousins that lived in Ohio and Oklahoma, and I recall them coming out every summer, and we would make an annual trip to Disneyland, at least up until like when you get into elementary school. But I think once you get into junior high or middle school and high school, mm-hmm. Disneyland back then wasn't as cool. So I think we spent, with my friends, we would go more towards Knott's Berry Farm because they had some fun roller coasters or even maybe Magic Mountain. It just seemed like the cooler place to be. I think even Knott's had a dance club called like the Studio K back then. So that was very hip place to go.
Yeah, it's true. I do remember that era where Disneyland wasn't, like you said, cool. Like when you're a teenager, you just didn't look at it as a place. I mean, it had roller coasters, but then you saw roller coasters like at Magic Mountain and Knott's, and quite different.
And the cousins from Ohio, that's very familiar to me.
Yes. And they always come out, because Disneyland and California is just a popular place to, I'm sure, to take their summer breaks.
So what made you, how old were you when you decided to work at Disneyland, and what made you decide to work there?
Well, I was 2 years out of high school, so I was probably 19 years old.
Okay.
I wasn't even considering, Disneyland wasn't a place on my radar to go to work. In high school, I was not a very good student. I was kind of like a loner, kind of introverted. Mm-hmm. And so my big things back then were just music, movies, and television. Mm-hmm. After high school, I tried to go to community college. I did go to community college. I went to a place called Cypress College, which is out past Knott's Berry Farm.
Yeah.
And it's quite funny because when you are on, you go to that kind of school, you learn really quickly that you can actually drop courses before you fail, So
yeah.
I was very good at telling my mom, hey, I'm a full-time student. And then like 3 months later, I'm down to like one class because I couldn't keep up with the homework. Yeah, so I wasn't very disciplined, but for some reason, I think I was, you know, struggling in 1984. Mm-hmm. Disneyland started becoming in the news. I think it was when Michael Eisner and Frank Wells were joining the company. Right. And I just remember that in the newspapers or television news that all of a sudden Disney was, you know, a lot of news stories were happening and they're all talking about Disneyland's going to change. They're going to make more movies that are more popular with the public. So for some reason, I was back then, I was only working part-time jobs. All my jobs had always been, you know, a friend owns a store, you know, go work for them. There's no training. You just show up and they tell you what your job is. I think my last job, I was working for the Major League Baseball Angels Stadium in the food concessions. And I just remember you just had to go before the game and bring all the hot dogs and hot dog buns to all the concession stands. And then at the end of the game, clean everything up. So it was kind of a job that you only worked when the Angels were in town. So it was like you worked 5 days off, by, you know, 5 days on, 5 days. Right. But then I knew I needed to get motivated to do something because I wasn't doing well in school. And then I just saw it for some reason, Disneyland attracted me. It's like you when you're in Southern California, you always think, oh, I want to work in the entertainment business. And Disneyland was in Orange County because LA was kind of a scary place back then. It's like, oh, I got, you know, LA going to up there for anything. Right. For being an Orange County kid, it was just like another world. So
yeah, I hear you.
So I finally applied and just thinking, and it was tough to get a job back then. I remember the interview process and they were looking for outgoing people. So I knew I had to, when I went to that first interview, I would have to be perceived as someone that is outgoing and friendly. And so somehow I made it through that in a group interview. And I remember they, you know, you send you something that, oh, you're going to, we hired you, you're going to be in the parking lot. And I'm like, and I think I only said I want to do attractions or custodial. So I know I didn't want to do foods and I didn't want to do merchandise.
Yeah.
And then when they gave me a parking lot, I'm going, this is strange. It's not really, not knowing then what the whole area was, you know, it's part of Main Street attractions, but I didn't know that. They only said you're working the parking lot. So I was kind of, I don't know, maybe probably a little disappointed because you have your dream of working like the Jungle Cruise or the Matterhorn.
Right.
But, and I remember you have to get, you know, grooming was very strict back then. So I had to make sure my hair was cut short and, you know, you show up for your first day at Traditions. And that was kind of like what blew me away because I've never had a job where it's actually, you know, the importance of going to Disney University with those Traditions people and all the movies you watch and this, the whole, I got indoctrinated into the whole Disney culture. And it's like, this was something I've never, ever experienced.
It was definitely harder back then. I know that people that aren't familiar with those time periods in the 80s, 90s, it was a lot harder to get in. And I think it was a job at Disneyland was kind of looked up upon. Like it was something that when you said you worked at Disneyland, like, ooh, really? You know, it was kind of impressive. I don't know if that is the same nowadays, but I remember it was definitely in the 80s, 90s. It probably before that too, but I don't have any reference for that, but yeah.
Especially in the early 80s, the like my friends, they all worked at Knott's because Knott's didn't have a haircut policy. You could have your hair kind of longer over your ears, your collar. And, you know, no one wanted to work at Disneyland because, oh, that's too strict. And they only hire, you know, it's very hard to get a job there.
Well, to be fair, there's a lot more positions at the resort now, you know. True. Back then, you might have 10,000 cast members. At Disneyland, but now you had, you know, it's like into the 30s for the resort.
Yeah, true. Yeah, so, it's harder to fill all those.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I remember when I got the job, it was a seasonal position because I was picked up or hired in March, and I think it was for their spring break. So I remember like the first weekend before spring break, I got my training. It was a 3-day training out in the parking lot. They trained you obviously how to park cars. They trained you at the toll plaza, and you got trained in how to work in the kennel. So those were your, and the rear, and the last one was the rear tram. You couldn't drive the tram, but you could stand on the back of the tram and, you know, spiel to the guests.
Right.
Yeah.
And back then I remember parking at the toll plaza, it was $2.50 to park your car.
Wow.
Holy moly. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So out of all those positions, what was your favorite one to do?
I think just being out in the, during a day shift out in the parking lot field, because can you remember now? Remember the parking lot was over 109 acres. It was pretty much about the size of Disneyland. They had 15,266 parking spaces. And basically you ran around for your shift, whether it was 4 hours, 6 hours, or 8 hour shifts. You know, the lead would drop you off and you would just be running around all the, remember the different sections? They had the Bambi section, the flower section. And a summer day, you would run that whole parking lot. I mean, I remember just on and anecdotally, I mean, I think I weighed 175 pounds when I got hired, but back by the end of that first summer, I was down to like 145 pounds.
Wow.
Jeez.
Yeah. 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 I remember that was it Mickey or Minnie was the farthest one out there.
You had Mickey and Minnie were, no, the farthest ones were Winnie the Pooh, Tinkerbell and Thumper. And, remember we wore back to my first year, costume was, long pants all summer long. You had a short sleeve shirt, the orange and yellow shirt, but long sleeve, no, I'm sorry, long pants. And your shoes were not tennis shoes. They were actually a leather type of shoe with a heel. So it was not very conducive to running.
Had to have a defined heel. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So can you imagine when it's, you know, July weather and you're wearing long pants and a defined heel shoe when you're running constantly.
Yeah.
And, I don't know if Ken or Lynn, if you remember back and then, I know it wasn't good guest friendly, but I think when we parked cars, especially in the summertime, we would park the back sections first because it was easier to, for some reason, it was easier to get those sections parked when you had the most cast members. And then later on in the afternoon, then you'd start parking closer to the front gate. But I remember a lot of people in their cars were like, why am I going all the way to the Winnie the Pooh section in the back? You know, it's like another half mile to the entrance. But there was a method to that madness.
Right, right. I think I remember thinking that too.
This was 1985, right?
Correct. Yeah, this was Disneyland's 30th anniversary.
30th anniversary celebration. They've got all that stuff out in front. Cars. They're giving away cars.
Yes, they had an Esplanade right in front. Had about 10 or 12 cars, General Motors cars, that were just like a car display because they were giving a car away every 30,000th guest anyways, but I guess in the deal with General Motors, they said you can put all your latest models out there. It's kind of like a showroom.
That's great. I remember that. I was still younger, but I do remember that.
Probably they had that deal with GM. GM had the World of Motion Pavilion at Epcot opening in 1982. And so they had this ongoing deal with GM. So, yeah.
So I remember, I did my 3 days of training and then you worked I remember we could get, our during the hours of spring break, you could get pretty much close to 40 hours. It was funny because when you were just tired and seasonal, especially in the parking lot, they would just give you basically sometimes just a 4-hour shift on your schedule. Right. And then depending on if it's busy, we'll bump it to 6 hours. And you had no choice. You had to stay basically six. And then if it really got, you know, they had to call 6, then they would say, okay, we'll extend you to 8 hours. But
it's being a cast member, you know, it's like, you can get scheduled any day and it could be for, you know, almost any shift and it could be 4 hours schedule or 6 hours. And then you get there and it's like, oh, we really need you to stay for the full 8 or we would really like it. There are even days where it's like, quote unquote, mandatory overtime, you know, you're strongly encouraged to work overtime.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And back then you just basically dedicated when you worked for Disneyland, I think you were at the mercy of your scheduler and you were just whatever they gave you. You really couldn't argue, especially if you're seasonal. You couldn't say, well, I want this week off. You had to be available all the time for them.
And then you have people who need the money. So they're scrambling for as many hours as they can get, you know?
And then after the spring break week, when we had, you know, longer hours, but then it would definitely after the Easter time, the hours would go back to 10 to 6 through the day. And the parking lot had only so many full-time cast members. They had a full-time cast member. They had a working lead at the Toll Plaza with one full-time cast member. The parking lot had the working lead and a full-time cast member worked at the kennel and the hotel tram. And everyone else was just on a 4-hour shift.
Well, 1985 was also, early in 1985 is when they decided, you know, it's going to be Disneyland's no longer going to be closed regularly in the off season on Mondays or Tuesdays. It's going to be a 365 day a year thing. So there was probably a push for hiring just for that alone.
Yes. I think that's what they were anticipating. And then I remember for part of the 30th anniversary, they had they called it the family open house for cast members and families. And that happened in May. And actually they, after park hours, they would, they took a tram and they let it drive around backstage and we would drive around cast members and their families and they would get a tour of the paint shop and the other shops that are backstage of Disneyland in the parade building. And they would give them, it has like free food. It's kind of like their family Christmas parties, but this was during the spring, and it was just kind of like a special thing they did for the 30th anniversary.
That's neat. Yeah, I heard about that.
I remember I took a shift where it's like standing on the back of the tram, and it's like, oh my God, we're going, you know, down through Frontierland, then back through a gate, and then we're in backstage, and because everyone would board the tram in the hub.
Wow.
But
that's different.
Yeah, now they don't really have time for that kind of stuff.
No, not at all. Nothing closes at 6 anymore, it seems like. No. But then the summer came along, and this was the year that Videopolis opened on June 22nd, 1985, Videopolis, which helped get Disney. Now it was more cool to go to Disneyland. I think they had a special ticket that summer. I'm not sure if annual passes started, but I know they had a special after 4 ticket for the kids that wanted to go to the Videopolis at night.
Yeah, I got to compete with Studio K.
You know. Exactly. So, and I just remember, if you remember the parking lot, there was, you know, just a big 1,000 acres of asphalt, and the trams that drove around, they were, there was no dedicated tram lane. So we drove through the parking lot with cars all around us and guests walking. And I remember that first 4th of July, we parked probably a full parking lot. And after the fireworks, when we got the trams out there, the trams got stuck because so many cars were leaving after the fireworks that nothing could move in the parking lot. And, you know, the trams would be stuck there for hours.
Well, wouldn't loading for people leaving, it would be like by the monorail beam, the one that's, you know, kind of towards the picnic area or whatever. There was load into those trams, and it was those trams, not, you know, now the trams have doors on them and everything. They're a little bit larger and they have doors on them. Back then, it was just, there was no door. You were expected to just stay seated, and
yeah.
And if you fell out, it was because you weren't paying attention, you know?
Yes, which happened. People would lose their Mickey ears or whatever, would fly out, and you'd see the dad jump off, and it's like, that was the worst mistake. As soon as his foot hit the ground, he would tumble.
Oh, jeez.
The trams didn't go fast, probably like 15 or 20 miles an hour, but when it's people didn't realize, though. Fast enough.
Yeah.
And everybody, the exits were all out onto West Street, which was towards the Disneyland Hotel and all that. I mean, it was all the exits were onto the West Street for the parking lot.
Correct. So everyone made a mass exit. And that's when those busy times in the summer after 4th of July, we would get stuck because the trams could, once it got moving into the parking lot, there were so many cars lined up because the stops, you know, there's signals and stuff, and the cars would just be backed up and you couldn't move.
Wasn't there a gate off of Catella too? But was that just entrance?
There was an extra entrance gate, wasn't there? Did you ever use that when you were there?
Yes. A lot of times, basically from July until August, the Catella gate would open because the Harbor Toll Plaza, there's so many cars. I guess the Catella would handle traffic coming from San Diego. They would divert them down Catella and then through that gate. To keep it from backing up.
I remember seeing that gate there.
The other option was Harbor Boulevard was the other option. I mean, that was the main one. And then, yeah, Catella was the extra one.
Yeah, because everyone parked. Even cast members parked just right across from Harbor House. So that was a cast parking, and everything else was guest parking.
Long before parking structures.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then on July 17th, the 30th anniversary date, the park stayed open for 30 hours straight, which was kind of interesting in the parking lot because some cars never left. So it was always kind of weird because you had to park around a lot of existing cars that, you know, were staying for the whole party. But admission back then was $16.50. So,
oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Disney, if anyone's never parked at Disney, anyone listening to us has never parked at Disney, you know, you're directed where to park usually. You know, it's not like some of these other venues where you just kind of drive around looking for an open spot. This is Disney will systematically park you.
Yeah. So that first summer was very exciting. As soon as the summer was over, I was offered the chance to go what they call casual regular. So it would let me work during the weekends because they did a lot of definitely the weekends, and some they did a lot of parties on Friday nights, either private parties or mix-in parties. So and only a few people got sucked. I remember I had to interview if I wanted to be regular, and I'm sure it was based on my attendance and if the leads and the supervisors liked me. But, you know, out of all the seasonal people, they picked like maybe 20 people can go casual regular. So that was a big deal.
Yeah, because that's when you start gaining seniority. If you were casual seasonal or casual temporary or whatever the designation was, you're not gaining seniority. You know, you're not, it's, it, once you become casual regular, it's a big deal. Yeah. So as you point out, you know, it in various departments, I guess it just depended on how many people were still there and wanted it. Ideally for Disney, you know, they would have more people wanting it than, you know, than they had slots so they could pick the better cast members, but didn't always work out that way as the years went by.
No, but I bonded well with the crew, the cast members that came in during my time. And I think that was a changing point in my life because it made me start getting more focused on what I wanted to do. A lot of the friends that were, that I was friends with then, they started going back to, you know, the university, and it's like, oh man, I need to buckle down because otherwise, you know, I'm not going to finish schooling, or I'm going to be do I want to be a full-time Disneyland cast member? And I was, you know, people would tell me, I remember some of the full-time people said, yeah, you better go back to school. Cause some of the people, some of my leads were college graduates. And for some reason they stuck with Disneyland instead of getting, you know, another job in their, what their degree was in school. So they kind of pushed me saying, you're better off, you know, instead of trying to be a B or an A, like a full-time Disneyland, you're better off trying to go to school and get your degree.
Yeah. That was a trap that people would fall into. It's like when I referenced earlier, people needing more hours. And so what would happen is people would neglect their studies just because it's like, well, I'm going to pick up a shift or something. And they, you know, either get conflicted with their class schedule, or they just didn't have time to do their homework or whatever. And they would keep pushing for hours because they needed the cash. And then it ends up hurting their career, or maybe they don't get their degree, or they get their degree and they're in this trap of, well, I need to focus on getting hours here. And, and, you know, they don't really pound the pavement looking for, a job, you know, or it's daunting because they had this security really at in their Disney position, and applying somewhere else means they're kind of starting all over again. So that's the kind of trap people would fall into. And then it's like, oh, you know, the years go by and it's like, well, here I am. I'm a Disneyland cast member, which, you know, for Disney, that's, I mentioned this before, and you know, that we need people there with institutional memory. You know, if the turnover is too high, then it's just like you got a bunch of people who are trying to reinvent the wheel, and it's like, no, you know, you need some people with institutional memory that keep the standards around, you know.
Yeah, most definitely. So what I did is I knew I needed to go back to the community college because I wanted to, my goal was to try to get to Cal State Fullerton, which was a university, but I needed to get my 2 years in under community college. So I tried to go back to school and work at Disneyland, you know, just work a couple days a week if I could pick up a 4-hour shift during the week, but, you know, focus school like on Mondays and Wednesdays. And so I tried to manage both.
And how was that?
That's hard.
It's hard. And it did take me, you know, like you said, it took me about 4 years from out of high school to get the 2 years at a community college, just because, you know, just to buckle down finally to get the studies done and get the degree, or get the 2-year degree. But Disneyland was a fun place to be, though.
Was that at Cypress or was that at Fullerton JC?
Yeah, I got something close. I went to Fullerton JC, but I did pick up some fun shifts because I remember back in December of 1985, they did this event called Skyfest. I don't know if you remember it, but they launched million balloons for Walt's birthday. Not a very environmentally friendly.
Yeah, stuff they don't do. I think the last big one Disneyland did was 1989, but yeah, they don't do that stuff anymore.
But I remember working out in the parking lot, and then, you know, they had these tents where they filled all the balloons, and I remember they going out onto Catella Avenue and launching them all, and that was a great time. And then that being casual regular, I realized quickly that my department involved more than just the parking lot. It was actually called Center Stage, and actually involved working Main Street vehicles, steam trains, Great Moments with Mr. Lincoln. And so eventually I worked with my scheduler, and it's like, oh, like, and can I get trained on the Main Street vehicle? So I think in 1986, I finally got trained on how to drive the fire truck, the omnibus, and the red and yellow horseless carriage. So that was fun.
Yeah, cool.
I also learned to be a tram driver. So now I could, besides being rear tram, I could actually drive the trams, which is a lot more flexibility too on your shifts. You could pick up more hours that way.
I always thought the main street vehicles were tough to drive because you always had to, then you had to deal with the crowds. I don't know. It would make me nervous that I'd hit someone or they'd jump out in front of me. Yeah.
Yes. Plus the fact that they're all stick shifts and I was, you know, used to driving automatic. So that took a little bit of having a clutch and a brake without stalling.
Yeah.
Especially on busy days.
Were the did the trams include the hotel tram or not?
Yes, it did. The parking lot tram was a 5-string tram. The hotel tram was a 3-string tram. So obviously the hotel tram, you only had to drive. You didn't have to have a rear tram, but you had to cross West Street, which was always tricky, right?
That's the big thing. West Street. I was going to say, because, you know, now it's just, it's all connected, right? You know, the former West Street, which is Disneyland Drive, it goes under the connection. But back then it was separate property. I mean, you had to drive across the street.
Yes, wait for the signal. Yeah. Hope no one ran the light and you cut across and you drop them right in front of the monorail station over there.
Nice.
And just on a side note, the parking lot trams, I guess I was reading, they're going to be at the expo this year. Like, there's going to have some sort of vehicles, all these vintage vehicles. And I think one of those original parking lot trams from the 80s, 90s will be on display at the expo this year.
Oh, cool.
At the expo. You know who else will be at the expo? We will. Ah, there we go.
That's right.
So as we move into 1986, remember, this is the time when Disneyland's open every day, but for the most of the, besides the holiday seasons, they're a 10 to 6 operation and very few people come in and they're looking. And this is when Eisner and Wells are trying to boost attendance. So they come up with this event in 1986 called Disneyland Circus Fantasy. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Yes. Then you're glad you're not in custodial.
Yes, they had elephants marching down Main Street.
Hard to believe. When you think about it nowadays.
Yeah, that was it was an overlay. They did these park-wide overlays. In this case, it was, you know, theming up stuff with circus. They had clowns walking around and, you know, they had circus acts in various places in the park. They had those carny games, you know. very unlike Disneyland.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, whoever was in the promotions department, I guess, convinced the leadership that this was a good idea. And I guess it did probably bring in crowds on the weekends. Like you said, Disneyland was not the place to be, and annual pass holders were just starting out, so they needed to draw attendance during the slow time.
Yeah, they didn't have the food and wine festival or anything like that, you know.
Yeah. But things were changing. They did... I think in June of 1986, Big Thunder Ranch opened. So that's like a new addition. It opened, and actually they didn't open with the barbecue. The barbecue opened in the fall. So, but they just had the animals and the petting farm. But the big thing that was great. It was something to do, and people loved the horses at Disneyland. You could see they had like the corrals for the horses. And I think they even built like a little cabin out there too. Do you remember that?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then that was nice. And the big thing of 1986 was Captain EO premieres.
Oh yeah.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
That was a big deal. I remember when that opened.
Yeah, because
they had a TV special for it. And
yeah, I just remember, if you ever listened to podcasts with Tony Baxter, he mentioned that, you know, Tony had all these ideas for his attractions like Star Tours and Splash Mountain, but Michael Eisner thought, oh, can you open those next year? And they're like, no, those take like 3 to 5 years. And he wanted something right away. So he said, we can get a movie open in a year. So that's how they picked Captain EO.
Yeah, they had seen, I think, the Magic Journeys movie. And they thought, I remember reading this where they were like, what can we do with this technology to make something really, really exciting? Because Magic Journeys is really nice, but it's really mellow, you know, and they're like, what can we do? So they're like, okay, you know, and so they got Michael Jackson and they've got Francis Ford Coppola and George Lucas and, you know, big deal. You know, Michael Jackson at the time was like the king of pop. I mean,
he was
biggest star in the world.
Yeah.
You have to liken it. If we did a Disneyland had an attraction with Taylor Swift now, it'd be kind of like on that level. 1986 also saw the start of the Country Bear Vacation Hoedown. Did you ever see that show?
Oh yeah. One of my favorites. Yeah.
Let's back up. 1972, the Country Bear Jamboree opened at Disneyland after it opened at Walt Disney World. And this was a kind of an overlay and a new set of songs. And it was just, it was basically the Bears were putting on a different show than the one they put on before. So, yeah.
Yeah. And then sad note, the last, in October of 86 saw the last Golden Horseshoe Review with, you know, the old Wally Bogue show. That was finally had its end.
That was such a big deal. People would line up for that. And, you know, that was the two restaurants people would really line up for were the Golden Horseshoe or the Golden Horseshoe Review. And then also the Tahitian Terrace, which is where Tropical Hideaway is now. But yeah, that was, you know, if you wanted to do those, you might rush over there first thing in the day to see if you could make reservations or what you could do to secure a spot.
Yeah. And I just remember 1986 for me working because the park in the summertime, they had between July and August, they were opening the Disneyland from 8 a.m. to 1 a.m. It's long park hours. I remember in parking lot, you wouldn't get your shift would end around 2:30 in the morning.
Jeez. So
I remember I used to try to get like three night shifts and a couple day shifts. So you didn't sleep much. When you're young, you just basically worked a lot of hours and you would even hang out with your friends after. I can't believe we would go after 2:30. We would go to Hojo's or something and probably wouldn't get home till 3:30 or 4.
Right. Going to breakfast, you know, there's Denny's or Hojo's. Yeah.
And you could work as many hours as you want. I remember that's picking up shifts 6 days. You could pick up a guest control shift in the park from 12 noon to like 12 at night or something, because you'd work all the day parades and do the both night parades. And they would give you a Jungle Cruise costume. And so you would, between parades, they would have you just stand as a greeter. But you could pick up those shifts. And I remember I was working easily 6 days every day in the summer.
Jeez. Well, and at night it was the electrical parade, right? Main Street Electrical Parade?
Yeah, they ran it twice. They had a 9 o'clock parade, then fireworks at 9:30, then they ran it again at 11. Back then it was Fantasy in the Sky.
That was before the electrical parade went away forever, never to be seen again. That's right.
Yeah, we know that came back. But moving into 1987 was a big year as well, because this is the first year the attraction Star Tours opened up in January of 87, and they opened up with a 60-hour party at Disneyland.
That's they were doing time. Live TV remotes. I remember for that. I came to the party. I got the watches. You know, it's that was a big deal, because you know you're coming on the heels of Captain EO, and now, I mean, Tomorrowland was getting. Yeah, I mean, it had just gotten Captain EO. Now it's getting Star Tours. Yeah, that's a big deal.
Yes, I remember the park opened at Friday at 8 a.m. on Friday, and it did not close till Sunday night at 10.
Jeez. That must, you know, I think about it from a custodial perspective. Night crew, they have to deal. Night crew it was probably a little bit like grad night for them. It's like night custodial normally doesn't have to deal with guests much, but you know, those were the times where it's like now they've got to deal with the guests.
And also in May of 87, they did the Disney Dollars. You remember the Disney Dollars distribution in the park?
Yeah, I do.
That was beginning.
Wow.
Oh, boy.
And then I know, Lynn, one of your favorite places, the Disney Gallery opened that year.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Ken. Yeah, Ken and I.
I hate that place. No. That was a pivotal moment in my life, was the Disney Gallery opening. Yeah. It was a big deal.
And another milestone of 1987 was the groundbreaking for Splash Mountain, which was going to open in 2 more years.
Another pivotal moment in my life. I was an annual pass holder, you know, during these years. So it was, would come almost every week and see the progress.
Yeah, and I think that was bad news if you were a Main Street steam train cast member, because I think they closed the trains at one point during that construction period.
Yes, that's true. That's something, and that allowed them actually to put a Ferris wheel at the Main Street train station for... What was it, State Fair?
That, you're right, Ken. That State Fair debuted in November of 1987.
The Circus Fantasy wasn't enough. You had to do State Fair as well.
Yeah, Circus Fantasy was in March, and then State Fair came in the fall, and then another year, we're getting another event. But this is Disneyland trying to increase attendance during the slow season.
Like when it had a slow season.
Yeah, so if we move into 1988, so we go into January of 1988, we get No, it's actually March of 1988. We hit Blast to the Pass, which runs right after Circus Fantasy.
Oh, that's
Circus
right.
Fantasy was January, Blast to the Pass in March.
And this was 1950s themed, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, if they did that now, it would be the 1990s. Think about that.
That's crazy. Thanks, Ken.
I know.
Oh, it's so... So, well, the music, the cars, they had characters that were, you know, set
Do you recall the radio station K-Earth 101?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes.
Yes, they were broadcasting during that event from Disneyland.
Yeah. That was before Disney got, you know, because it was years later that Disney bought ABC, which included radio stations at the time. So they could have anyone there without anyone feeling like, you know, without any of the radio stations feeling like, you know, Disney was favoring their competition or whatever, you know. It was just, yeah. K-Earth, that made sense because K-Earth had music from the 50s and 60s. And now K-Earth has music from the 80s and 90s.
Oh, wow. So
it's still the oldies station. It's just oldies. Different oldies.
Wow.
Yeah.
So Jeff, were you during this whole time you started parking, you did Main Street Vehicles. Did you also by this point were you trained on the trains and Lincoln yet?
Yes. This time the scheduling was weird because remember back then your schedules, I think they'd come out every week, they'd be posted on a board and you had to write them down. I mean, I still have nightmares of not remembering my schedule because everything was written on a piece of paper, put in your pocket. And, you know, one of your nightmares is waking up. It's like, oh, did I get what is my schedule today? You know, because it wasn't something on a computer. It wasn't, you know, it was only in your memory. And you would get scheduled. I could pick up shifts anywhere. You know, you could work parking lot one day, Main Street Vehicles another day, work Great Moments with their Lincoln. And Disneyland was great for me. Like you said, it changed my attitude. I became a traditions assistant. I remember I applied for that and got that, where I would help the traditions, you know, was like a 2-day event back then. And I remember the second day the traditions assistant would teach all the boring stuff like the OSHA requirements and working with chemicals. And then we would gather up all the new employees and we'd take them out to the area. So I remember bringing the people from the Main Street area, I would bring them to their foods location. I'd bring them to merchandise locations and the parking lot and the Main Street vehicle. So that was my job on the second day of traditions. I don't know if you remember your traditions on that, your second day in custodial. Did you get picked up by someone and they would take you and show you where the offices are and everything?
Yeah.
Oh boy. I remember vaguely my onboarding. Yeah.
Being nice to your scheduler was the most important thing at Disneyland because they had your life in your hands with your hours and you're working nights or days.
They had your social security numbers memorized.
Yeah. But a big event for me in 1988, this was an Olympic year. And I remember I was working Main Street and Vice President George Bush came with the U.S. Olympic team. And I remember they did an event on the train station. And it was memorable for me because I remember they were Secret Service had snipers on top of the buildings, you know, to protect the vice president. Yeah. And like, oh, my God, this is like so bizarre that, you know, we're in such a high security area here on Main Street.
Well, that would be.
That was... That was interesting. Anytime, you know, Secret Service comes to Disneyland, it's quite a sight to see.
So I guess we can move on to 1989. This is when I finally, during the 87-80, I finally got to Cal State Fullerton. And so I graduated from Cal State Fullerton in May of 1989 with a degree in communications. And advertising. And I even did an internship at Disneyland, one of the first internships in their advertising department. So that was very eye-opening. And I loved it because back then I would basically, you know, remember the old guidebooks and they'd do weekly guide. I was put in charge as the intern. I had to update all the guide maps and guidebooks and stuff like that for Disneyland.
Oh, very cool.
Nice.
And the best job was they did a lot of radio promotions back then for Disneyland, you know, all the different events they had during the year. And they'd send me out to Los Angeles to record. You know, I'd help the writing of the 60-second spot. And then I'd get to go to Los Angeles and they'd hire an actual, you know, professional voice actor and we'd record it. And I remember just sitting in the booth and I'd have to, you know, as a Disneyland representative, I'd just like, oh, that was good. Or do another take of that. You know, you felt like so important. And, you know, I wanted to work at Disneyland and then in the advertising department, but there just weren't enough jobs. But I still, you know, I got my first job in, after graduation, I got a job in, do you remember when cable television had their cable studios where they would like run, make commercials like the local pizza place or the local mall shop? Mm-hmm. That was my job of like going to the mall. Oh, this company, this candle store company wants to make a commercial to put on cable TV. And we would do that.
Those were the days.
Yes.
All this stuff that's changed now, you know. So you were there and, gosh, so Splash Mountain opened in 89, right?
Yeah, that was a big event. It opened in July, but remember it was supposed to open in January, February, because I remember they did this big McDonald's tie-in and they missed, and the Splash Mountain was having trouble with the logs. And so I remember they had to run the commercials, but the attraction wasn't open yet. And that was kind of a strange thing.
Not the ideal situation for McDonald's, you know. So,
and I remember that 1989, they had the Major League Baseball All-Star Game at Anaheim Stadium. It was just before the official opening of Splash Mountain, and so they had a party. Remember, in the Bambi section of the parking lot, just in front of the ticket booths, they put this huge tent. And they had all the Major League Baseball players that were in the All-Star Game. They had a big party. It was like a Western party. I think Gene Autry was alive back then, so it was kind of like a Western themed party. And the parking lot, we had to make all the players would come in with their cars, and we had to valet park everyone. I remember they set that up, a valet parking spot. So I remember Dodger players like Oral Hershiser. I don't know if you remember him, but he was a famous pitcher. Oh, yeah. I remember parking his car, Dave Winfield. They'd all pull in to go to the party, and we parked their cars for them.
That is cool.
You didn't drive off with any of them?
I know I should have, but but I know they got to go experience Splash Mountain because a week after it had its official opening to the guests. Nice. And as cast members, I remember testing it all through the early summer and in the spring and early summer, and it used to get people very wet because I remember I was driving Main Street vehicles and they would say, oh, cast members, you were offering, if you want a test ride. So I would pick my fire truck and I'd drive backstage to the Splash Mountain and we'd go ride the attraction. But the problem was back then they couldn't, the water was basically going over the whole log. So you would show back to your work location, is like your costume was like soaking wet. So the managers weren't happy.
For the Disneyland Railroad, what was your exact job?
Oh, yeah. The railroad was the back. You were the conductor.
Okay. Yeah.
So you gave all the spiels and, you know, you would give the all aboard and then you would give this hand signal to the train engineers because that's like a union job where you had to know how to work with the steam engine. So we could never touch that. But, you know, they always give you, if you were kind of slow at loading, you always say, if you hear the whistle of the train, like you could tell the train engineer was wanting us to move faster. So we always get these signals like load the guests faster, but it was a fun job. I mean, you just, on slow nights, I remember the trains would be operating and no one would be on the trains and you could kind of like sit in the back seat and just, ride around and not really have to spiel too much, especially on party nights.
Oh yeah.
But it's one of those jobs. It's great for breaks because you would get your break, you know, it was like a 20-minute trip around. So if timing, right. I remember if like you had to come back from your break, it's, oh, I missed my train. Well, I got to wait another 20 minutes then, you know, so now your break doubled. So that was always fun.
There must have been guys working that who had been part of the Retlaw days where the train, you know, it used to be the Retlaw was their employer, not Disneyland.
Yes. You know? There were some people there that, yeah, like you said, had, you know, 10, 15, 20 years. And because remember, Disneyland had that cast member strike in 84, and that changed everything. Where when I hired in, there was like two salaries. Like if you were hired in before 84, you could top out at practically $12 an hour. But for me, I could never get more than like $8 an hour because I was under a new contract. And back then, Main Street train station was only guys. Same with the Main Street vehicles. It was kind of, you know, the great moments when Mr. Lincoln was supposed to be female, but I became a lead back in like 88 and they made me, my first lead position was at the Great Moments with Mr. Lincoln, right? So I had to wear this like tuxedo costume. It's very rare that a male worked in there, but I was one of the first. But back then leads was great to make because a lead's pay was like 75 cents more than the highest hourly cast member. So that $12 an hour, I got paid $12.75. So it kind of almost gave me an extra $5 an hour at being a lead. But back then, paying for school was not such a problem. I mean, I don't know what Cal State Fullerton was, but I remember just paying, you know, a couple hundred dollars for school back then. It wasn't, didn't seem like it was a lot.
That changed.
So back, basically when I graduated, I tried to manage two jobs. So imagine the summertime, I'd work 5 days a week and then try to get off by five to make like a 5:30, you know, closing parking lot shift and get off at 1:30 or two, and then try to wake back up at 6 a.m, 7 days a week. So you, when you're young, you can do this. I tried to do it for a couple of years. It just wears on you. I think Ken had that experience as well.
Except I had other job had a 4 day schedule. So what I could do is I just said, I need opening shifts Friday, Saturday, Sunday at Disneyland. And of course any holiday, but you know, so that way I didn't have to do the thing where I'm working a late shift and then an early, you know, or working two shifts on a Friday, you know, or whatever, nothing like that.
Yeah. So we continue my story. We go into 1990, and that is Disneyland's 35th year. And they had this big gift giver extraordinaire in the hub. They were giving away prizes.
Oh, yeah.
It was a big deal.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The Dream Machine. Yeah.
And here's was my closest, could have been one of my biggest days at Disneyland. I was selected. Ronald Reagan was going to come back for a rededication ceremony, and they had him going in a parade. He was going to be on the fire truck going down Main Street in a parade. And I remember my supervisor coming, oh, Jeff, do you want to drive the fire truck that day? And I'm like, with the president on board, I said, oh, this is the coolest thing in the world.
Wow.
You know, so I remember they told me I was going to do it. And then the Secret Service had to talk to me. And then I thought everything was fine. But then at the day the event happened, they didn't want an hourly cast member driving the fire truck. So they pulled me at the last minute and put in a salaried supervisor because, once again, it's the president. So I guess there's some, you don't want anything to happen, right? But it was disappointing. You know, I was telling all my friends, I'm going to be driving, you know, the fire truck with President Reagan on there. But I understood at the end because they had like six Secret Service people standing around the fire truck as it was going down. So it was pretty high profile, obviously.
Oh, wow.
And actually, he was the former president then, right? Yeah, because he was, he finished in 88, yes.
Yeah.
Right. And up until January 89. So, yeah, that was, but I remember that day I was there, took video on a VHS recorder for that.
Really?
But yeah, I was there that day. That was, Bob Cummings was there, barely, but he was there. Art Linkletter. You know, the guys from the opening special of who had been there July 17th, 1955.
And do you remember that year, 1990, they did the Mardi Gras parade with the inflatables?
That was a big deal.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And also, you might like the two things opened back in the Bengal Barbecue opened in Adventureland in 1990 and the Blue Ribbon Bakery on Main Street. And the big summer show was Dick Tracy at Videopolis.
Wow.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Diamond Double that Cross. Now, yeah.
Yes, they thought that was going to be the biggest movie of the summer, but I don't think it was the biggest movie of 1990.
They were trying to, you know, after Batman in 1989, they were thinking, well, we can, our comic book movie is going to be just as big. You know?
Yeah, so I continued working part-time, trying to manage two jobs. Going into 1991, this was the year they did the Disney Afternoon Live in Fantasyland. It was all the animated cartoons like the Gummy Bears and other things they would... They built like a little Toontown. It wasn't Toontown exact, but they had like facades of those where the characters would live. I don't know if you remember the old motorboat cruise.
Garish.
Yeah.
Yeah. The motorboat cruise. Do you remember what that was? What they did to it?
Was it Gummy Bears or something?
Yeah, it was Motorboat Cruise through Gummy Glen or whatever. But these were painted flats that they had. You know, this was not like an Imagineering thing. This was, you know, very minimal.
Yeah,
so that was a big thing for 1991. And the scheduling was coming up to again on grad nights. And I guess I knew my scheduler said you have to work some of these grad nights. And grad nights back then ran Thursday nights, Friday nights. And for the parking lot, I remember you had to stay all night parking those buses. And I just knew I wouldn't be able to handle both jobs. So I finally had to turn in my 2-week notice in like May of 1991. But I have lots of stories. But my girlfriend at the time was working at Disneyland and soon to be my wife. You know, like all those Disney stories, you meet your future wife at Disneyland. She was in guest relations at the time.
Wow. So then how did she stay there after you left or what?
Well, the story is, we probably don't have time for everything, but 1991 was a pivotal year because Disneyland or Paris or what it was called then, Euro Disney, was opening the following year in 1992. And my, I guess she was my fiance at the time. Anyway, she, mm-hmm. in 91, she spoke French. She was fluent in French. Her parents came from France, moved to LA when she was like 6 years old. So she spoke both languages. And she would get all the tours. Every time Michael Eisner or Frank Wells back then would bring in a French dignitary, she would be on the tour with those two. She knew Michael Eisner. She knew Frank Wells because she would be the interpreter as they toured toured around Disneyland. And during that summer of 91, they were looking, you know, they thought she would be perfect to go over as part of the opening crew. And we decided, and I was not working at Disneyland that summer, but they said, you know, you could, they said, Jeff, you have all this experience at the parking lot and Main Street. Would you want to be part of the opening crew as well? And they could hire you back in. So I kind of took a job knowing that I left the United States in January, or actually the last week of December in 1991 to start a new career at Euro Disney.
Wow. We'll definitely have to get into that another time for sure. Wow. So you have a lot of great time that you're there. A lot of pivotal things happened at Disneyland during that time for sure.
Exactly. Because you remember before I started, I couldn't complete school. I didn't know what mm-hmm. I was going to do. And then Disneyland, I think Disneyland, just being a big company, you kind of get overwhelmed with all the opportunities you have, all the cast activities, events you went to. I remember I took my first trip to Florida in 1986 because through the Disneyland line, they were offering cast trips through the Walt Disney Travel Company in January to go to Walt Disney World. They give you, it's a whole package deal. I remember doing that. You could take tours of WDI and the Disney Studios, part of cast activities. I remember in January, you know, you could get a 4-hour or an all-day tour. You would go to WDI in the morning and then they'd take you a tour of the studios. It was all part of cast activities.
Yes, I remember those things. They still did that. They still did that when I was there. And that was, the trips to Walt Disney World in January. I mean, that was a slow season. So it was for both Disneyland and Walt Disney World. So it's like, all right, cast members can go from Disneyland and go visit Walt Disney World. And that was a great time to go.
Yeah, there was so much opportunity.
The studio and all that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, so many things you could do at Disneyland through the cast activities and just so many opportunities. Like I said, I did my internship there. I wanted to, you know, work full time. And like everyone else, I would love to have worked at WDI, but it was just tough. I mean, you would always go to these interviews, but you'd know they already had who they're going to select. And like you said, they were looking for more experienced people, but I still enjoyed the whole experience. Disneyland changed my life for the better.
Well, that's really cool. I definitely want to talk with you more. But thank you so much for coming on, Jeff, and telling us your story.
Yeah. I appreciate it. If I come back, I'll tell you about, because when I came to, after that, I got my first salary job when I went to Europe. So I became a supervisor of operations. So that was kind of a different experience.
Is there anything you have to plug right now or?
No, just plug, the concierge travel and your future appearances at the expo. Yeah. Thanks for letting me be on the number one podcast hosted by former Disneyland custodial.
Thank you.
Well, Ken, another great episode.
Yes, yes. We'll have to have him back. He's another person to add to that list of people we have to have back because, you know, he has more to tell us. But I wanted to cover those years, those initial years of his original stint as a cast member.
Yeah, and, you know, we've had other cast members on before, but it was really interesting because during that time with all those different promotions that were going on, I always found those very fascinating. And someday we will do this, Ken. I want to do a show specifically about those different promotions because I think they're also funny and sometimes hard to believe that those things went on in Disneyland, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Like elephants, yeah, like he had mentioned in the break. So, and a Ferris wheel, like you had mentioned at the train station. So,
yes. Yeah.
All right. Well, we do like to mention and read our reviews that we get on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, and we really appreciate them. So I want to read this new one that we received, and this one is titled Great Stories, 5 stars from SQMOFO. On Monday. So it just says Monday. So it was last week, whatever day that was. So a Monday at the end of June. It says, I love the chill vibe of this podcast and the stories from folks that have worked at Disney parks. Really great podcast.
All right. The chill vibe. Yeah. You know, I mean, there's people I know who want us to go, hey, everybody, welcome to the Sweet Spot Podcast. We are here today, and we're going to catch you up on everything that's happening at Disneyland.
That's right, Ken. You know, we're here. No.
Lynn, what do you have for us? Let's, you know, let's check traffic. no, you know, we there's people who like to listen to us as they drift off to sleep, which fine by me, you know, as long as you're listening.
Yeah, I'm a fan of sleep.
Which reminds me, you can have your smart speaker play the Sweet Spot podcast. Sometimes you have to emphasize that P. But you can, you know, have your smart speaker play us while you go about doing whatever. It's even if you've heard the episode before, just listen.
Yeah, blare it in your neighborhood. Let your neighbors know.
Yeah, share it with your neighborhood, you know, especially those neighbors who were blasting fireworks, you know, all month long.
You know what I heard is cool now, the cool kids are doing, Ken? Like, you don't blare your big music, you know, with the big bass, you know. What you do, the cool kids are blaring the Sweet Spot as they drive around.
Oh, of course they are. While they're wearing their Sweet Spot shirts.
That's right.
By the way, which they can get if they go to thesweetspot.com.
Yeah. That's right. All right, before we get too silly here, we better get going. But thank you so much for listening. We really appreciate it and hope you enjoy these just as much as we enjoy recording them. And we'll talk to you next time.